Okay, welcome everybody to this evening's teleseminar called How to Find Your Own Answers. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure to have you on the call this evening. In a moment from now I'll be chatting to our very special guest, JC Mack. But before I do, I just wanted to give you a little bit of a rundown on how this call will work this evening. We'll be on the line for around about an hour this evening, and over the course of that hour I'll be asking a series of questions to JC around the topic in question, also in particular around his life experience, because it is quite a profound one. Now, I'll also be mixing in some of the questions, either directly or indirectly, that actually came in through the website. So if you have asked a question, please listen out for it. It may not come in the form that you were looking for, but certainly you may well find it answered indirectly. Okay, just to give you a little bit of a rundown on JC, we have known each other for a couple of months now, and in our first initial meeting, I was blown away by some of the insights that JC was sharing with me, and I just thought the nature of our conversation, actually walking away from that conversation, I felt so uplifted and so inspired about my own life that I thought I just absolutely had to share some of the things that JC was coming up with my listeners. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome JC to the call. It's a call that I've been looking forward to for a few weeks now. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome to the call JC Mack. How are you doing, JC?
Fantastic, Damien. How are you?
I am going great.
On this lovely English sunny day.
It is. It's beautiful. Beautiful in the UK.
It is. Beautiful everywhere.
Okay, JC, I'm just going to just start the call off by just really sort of exploring the purpose of this call. We're going to, in a few moments from now, talk a little bit more about your experience, but I just thought we'd sort of kick the call off by sort of prefacing the message that you have for people, and I was just wondering if you could start us off there.
Well, the purpose for me, you know, just to contextualize the call for everybody or to kind of put it inside of something, really is to share my experience in hopes that it brings some kind of an insight to people that are on a similar path. You know, I think if you've experienced something and you have something to say about it, it can help others that are serious about the same things. So if anything I have to say based on my experience brings some kind of an insight to somebody, then I think we've done the job.
Mm.
How's that?
Sounds great. And on your website, JC, there's a big statement that welcomes people to the site about how your life changed dramatically on August 15, 2005. And I was just wondering if you can actually share with the callers on the line this evening what actually happened on that day for you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Let me back up before the 15th in 2005, because I think it has been building to that moment for most of my life. You know, I think I was born with an obsessive nature to find out more about the realization of spirit and God, or whatever you want to call it, doesn't really matter. So I've been on this path most of my life, consciously, like really determined probably for the last 20, 25 years. And throughout that period of time, I have pretty much tried everything that is out there in order to either develop myself, find a new insight, move a little closer to some kind of an experience of wholeness with myself in the universe, in a search for realization of some sort. So it's been a very ongoing process for me. And, you know, for many, many years, it was always about the next book or the next video or the next seminar or the next, you know, hoping that would get me to the next place. And I'm not saying any of that stuff didn't help, but it's certainly, you know, from where I am now, I can clearly see the process that's taking place. And at around 2000, 2003, I started having these small experiences where all my thinking would disappear, and And for the moments of the seconds that I would disappear, I would be in the presence of a peaceful stillness. You know, it's like the noise had disappeared, and what was there was a completely different view of the world and reality. And then my thinking would come back, and I would be back into my perception of the world. And this kind of built up through a series of experiences. And then on the 15th of August in 2005, while I was hanging up the phone during a business call in my office, an energy started coming down through my head, up through my hands, through my feet, up through my feet. And it was like the sensation of pins and needles and rushing water, like being under a waterfall. And it got more intense and more intense till it consumed my whole body. And my first thoughts were, I'm having a heart attack, or I'm having a stroke, or I'm about to drop dead here on the floor, and it's all over, and, you know, it's all come to this moment. But it kept going on and on and on, and then I began to realize that, well, I'm still alive, and this is continuing to go on, and I'm still alive. And it was so powerful that I couldn't move. I ended up on the floor, kind of curled up in a ball. And as the energy kept moving and moving and moving through me, I began to kind of surrender myself to whatever was taking place. And I began to do a little chant that I had been doing for years as an indication of letting go, of letting go. And one thing by one, like a set of dominoes, I began to let go of everything. You know, my thinking, my body, my life, my business, my children, my wife, my everything that I had, my identity, everything I had accumulated over the 50-odd years that I had been on the planet. And just as the last kind of domino fell, the energy disappeared and all thinking disappeared, and it was like I was left in this state permanently for a period of time, where there was no thinking, and all that was there was the beauty and perfection and timeless bliss of reality. And, you know, from that point on, it really took me out of the world, and I couldn't function and didn't eat much, and I lost a lot of weight, and I couldn't see the point of my business or being in the world anymore, because I would have been just as happy sitting there and never doing another thing because of the state I was in. And then after months of this, my thinking slowly started to return, but as the thinking returned, I started to panic. It's like the ego started to return, and the thinking part of the ego started to return, and I started to panic and get frightened and emotional about the whole experience. So I was really unequipped emotionally and mentally to deal with the experience once my mind returned. And that even made things a lot worse. So it has taken almost three years to really get back into the world in a way that I can function in kind of both worlds, so I'm of some use, seeing that I'm here, instead of just wandering off and sitting on a rock somewhere. So it's been a long process of getting right with the whole thing and the integration of the whole thing so I can function again. So that's kind of like where I'm at now with it. So there's still a conversation that happens in my head, although it does disappear at any given moment. But it's like it runs in the background now. It's not driving the conversation. You know, it's not driving my life. I'm not connected to it or attached to it like I used to be. Like I used to think I was my thinking, and that the quality of my thinking was what I get paid for, and, you know, what I thought was the truth, and I related to it like it was me. It more like sits in the back like a program that's running now, and the spirit tends to just access that faculty in order to function in the world, which is a bit different than having the noise in your head run everything you do. So that's kind of where we're at with it now. And it's taken me a few years to really want to start sharing this with anybody else that may be experiencing these things, because I don't believe there's a lot of spiritual aftercare for people in the Western society that are having these experiences. There's certainly a lot of medical things you can go and see and be medicated for, and that's about as far as we've got with these kinds of things. It's diagnosed as something within a medical model instead of something that's of a spiritual nature or your spiritual development. So it's an opportunity really for me to share this and to hear from other people and to be in this conversation to support people and bring insights about what you can expect from these kinds of things so you don't think you're going mad, you know? So that's really why I wanted to start doing it, Damien.
Well, you know, I can really resonate with it, with your passion about sharing your experience with people. I guess the option would be not to share it, but I just wanted to just commend you, JC, for actually just offering your story as a guiding light for people.
Yeah, it's as if I have to now.
Yeah.
You know, it's as if it's part of who I've become now. A natural flow from who I've become is somebody that wants to start sharing about this, because I'm sure it's happening more and more as the consciousness of the planet rises and the consciousness of humanity rises, more and more of these things are going to happen. If you're on a serious spiritual path, spiritual things will happen to you. And if there's no support and structure for you when they're happening, you can often feel isolated and alone and taken right out of the world. And that just causes its own problems.
Now, JC, you alluded a little earlier on to the ego and the ego's desire to keep us small in a way by constraining our thinking and constraining our perceptions. I was just wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more about how the ego tends to keep us thinking in a way that's not really linked to our personal truth.
Well, I mean, I don't want to kind of demonize the ego, because it's a very useful, functioning part of who we are that has been developed over millions of years in order to have us survive in this world. I mean, it's what's got us where we've gotten to. It's just that, you know, the next leap into some realization of who we truly are doesn't include that. And it's from my experience, the last kind of block that's in the way of you seeing who you truly are. So, you know, it's not like throwing the baby out with the bathwater, you know, and having the ego be bad and wrong about something. No, you can use it to your advantage, because certainly for many, many years, you know, my ego was the thing that was driving me to spiritual development. The only, you know, but it's like the ego is being used to gather the information. But once the information begins to sink into who you are and the essence of the information is there, it begins to be the decline of the ego. So it kind of shoots itself in the foot in the end. So, you know, I want to make sure that those two things are there too. But having said that, as long as there's an ego and an identity and thinking that's going on, that's being driven by that identity, then you don't have access to who you truly are. And it's such an integral part of who we are as people. You know, the more complex we become, the more attached we are to ourselves. And we certainly are attached to our egos and our thinking and our thought processes like it's who we are. We relate to it like it's who we are. So it's a difficult thing to kind of separate from who you really are. So that, you know, any true spiritual path really works. I mean, the Buddhists call it no mind, and I'm sure there's a lot of other names for it. But really what they're saying is at some point in your development, that is going to disappear. So you could say enlightenment is really when the voice in the ego disappears, because then you're in the presence of reality. Do you know what I mean? So it's being able to work in both worlds and use it to your advantage, because the ego is a poor master. It's a good slave, but a poor master. You know, in all the work I've done in corporations, in banking and oil and everything else, people are paid for the quality of their thinking. The problem is it can become very, very neurotic, and it can actually go against you because, you know, you can't stop it. You know, as people say, this is who I am and I think this way. But if I were to say, if you have control of your thinking, then stop it, you wouldn't be able to do that. So it's kind of like a process that's just running as part of the who you are. But when you begin to really look at it, you begin to see, maybe that's not who I am. Maybe all that thinking is just like a program running, just like the rest of the animal that I am is running. And when you can start to distinguish that, you can begin to loosen the bolts on it. And then you start to get access to something else. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I just wanted to delve a little deeper into the concepts, the Buddhist concept that you mentioned just there, on the whole idea of no mind. Now, I've spoken to lots of people who've actually tried meditation, and I've certainly experienced this myself in my own meditation practice, where it almost, when you actually sit down to meditate, it can at times, for me personally, almost feel as if there's no chance in the world that my mind's going to stop.
Yeah.
Thoughts are running around, ideas are running around, business opportunities, friends, connections, things to do.
Yeah.
But like, how do you actually get into that blissful state of no mind? And I'm just wondering if you could describe that in a bit more detail.
I think it might be different for everybody. You know, in my case, in this particular lifetime, with this type of personality, with this passion for doing that, I've stumbled through it. You know, I've never felt that I was a Buddhist. I never felt like I was a this or a that, although I delved in all of it, like spiritual shopping. But, you know, because I was always kind of felt like I was outgrowing wherever I was and moving on to the next thing. So I don't think there's a single answer to the question. But I do know that the end is certain anyway, that we are all enlightened, and the only thing that's in the way of us seeing that are the obstacles, the karmic obstacles, or the things that we've created in past lives, the things we're creating in this life, are the stumbling blocks that we need to work through to realize who we truly are. So one way you might be able to begin to do that is to begin to see the structure of the ego, the way it works. Once you can begin to move away from it, instead of being thinking it's who you are, it begins to take on a different kind of a flavor. And if what you're doing is serious about becoming enlightened, then I think that that way will make itself apparent. Like I say, the end is certain anyways. It's like the end of the movie is already there, but it's just the scenes of inside the movie that keep moving around. So there's many ways to do those types of things. I don't think there's a fixed thing. I think meditation has value. I think contemplation may even have more value, because you can walk around all day long contemplating it instead of having set times when you meditate. I mean, I meditated for 20 years, and it had some value. And some days I'd sit and the monkey wouldn't shut up, and some days I'd sit and it would quiet down. But it certainly had benefits. It certainly had benefits. So, but I think the awareness in itself is transformational. When you can begin to detach from the thinking, it's like when you're meditating, at some point you can watch the thinking. First you think you're the thinking, then you begin to realize there's something watching the thinking. Consciousness is watching the thinking. So then you begin to move back from it and begin to see it for what it is, that it's just a program that's running. Then you're not so involved in it. Then it's not driving your life. It doesn't have the meaning that it used to have. So that's been my experience with it, Damien. And I don't have a set answer to how one, you know, there's no magic bullet that I can see to doing that. It's all a lot of work. It's all a lot of commitment. It can be very disruptive in your life. I mean, it's taken me years to get back into society in a way where I can function properly. You know, and I couldn't provide for my children. I couldn't pay the mortgage. I couldn't, you know, I lost my car. I lost all the money. I almost went bankrupt. I had all these things happening because I couldn't function. I couldn't get the integration of these experiences. So, and I'm not saying that's the path for everybody, but that's been my experience. So I think we're all headed there. There's no rush now that I look at it from this perspective. And your commitment towards enlightenment in itself is enough to have the universe bring you what you need to get closer to it. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Being committed to enlightenment means that whatever's in the way of attaining that state, those lessons will come to visit you anyways. The people that are in your life are there because you created them to learn and grow. You know, what you do for a career is something you've created to learn and grow. So it's all a lesson and kind of like a chess game, it's all kind of set up so that you can overcome the obstacles. So it's happening anyway. It's all happening anyway.
Yeah.
That you're here on earth is an indication that you have a commitment to become enlightened, that you're physical, that you're human. I think Buddha said that, you know, to have heard of enlightenment is one thing, but to seek it is the, you know, the highest goal of all, to choose to go after it because of what you have to overcome. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, yeah. And, JC, I just wanted to also talk about the people that actually showed up in your life. Now, I know that when you were moving through this experience in your life, like, you didn't really have a lot of reference points for it. And when you went in search of information on how to work with the energy that had entered your life, there wasn't a lot of easily accessible information. And I was just wondering, in terms of your path, like, who were the teachers that showed up in your life, and how did they help guide you through this experience and then help you reintegrate into life?
Yes. Well, once I was able to function a little bit more, I started searching the internet. I started asking questions. I started calling. I called the Zen community. I called this community, that community. I started asking questions. My thinking was, this has happened. If this has happened to others, I want to speak to those that it's happened to, so I can find out what's next. What's the next instruction? What do I do? How do I integrate this into the world? So it was a process of looking on the internet, looking at books, you know, and most of the information that I gathered was about people talking about the experience. But it was difficult to find those that had truly had some kind of a mystical or spiritual experience that was accessible to talk to. And so it was a very lonely place. I thought I was going mad at times, like a divine madness. And then eventually I was directed towards a woman named Nikki Slate here in the UK who had had a similar experience. And so she became the first person that I met with and sat with, and she explained the similar things that I'm explaining to you guys. She'd come and visit me. She'd take me out. You know, she'd say things like, stop your spiritual practices right now. Stop meditating right now. Eat more meat. Take a walk every day. Try and eat healthier if you can. Just things that would keep me grounded, to get me back into my body. So that has been a process of doing that. And then I went to somebody recommended acupuncture to rebalance the acupuncture system. I started doing some of that. And so it was just a series of that. I got some coaching from a person in California that had a similar experience that's working at that level right now in the prison system. He helped me out on phone coaching. So bit by bit, it started to land and settle. But again, you know, that's my experience. The area of spiritual aftercare in the Western world, I think there's a big gap there. That's what's been my experience. If it is out there, I couldn't find it. You know,
and
it wasn't a number, an 0800 number I could dial. I'd have gladly given them my credit card if there had been.
And with regards to the whole spiritual aftercare, what...
0800 aftercare.
I know certainly what you're stepping up and doing in the world, it definitely feels a part of that void. And I was just wondering what other things would be really useful for people who are going through that kind of experience.
Well, part of the you know, that we've been talking about in this teleseminar, and that is, I would like to, one of the things I think might be of benefit to people is just to have people be in communication with each other, so it's accessible for people to have these conversations. It's a very lonely place to be alone with this. Even though at moments you're so blissed out, it really doesn't matter. But if there's any thinking that's remained, it's different if your thinking never comes back. It really doesn't matter at that point. You know, if you're in that state kind of permanently, then it really doesn't matter. You've become that, and who you are is enough, and what you emanate into the field of consciousness is enough to counterbalance, you know, millions of people anyway. So But for me, it wasn't like that, you know. There was this initial stage of it, and then the thinking kind of returned, but in a different way, and it comes and goes. So I had to learn to function in both worlds. So I think if there is a forum we can create where people would like to share about this and share information on this and what worked for them and what didn't work for them, that would be good for people. So that's one thing you can do. In terms of finding other people, you know, I think it's important that being able to find somebody that's authentic may not be an easy task. There's a lot of people out there that'll claim a lot of things, but to actually find somebody that's authentic with integrity, that has had these kind of experience, that is willing to, you know, most information on these things, if it's true, it's free. The truth doesn't really have a price tag on it. It's you can't package it and wrap it and market it, you know, you don't need to dress funny to attain it, any of that kind of a thing. So the people that were of the most use to me, it was freely given. It was the truth about their experience, which helped me reconnect into the world. There was no charge for that. It was out of who they'd become that they were offering this information for the benefit of the people in the world. So, but that was been a difficult path. I haven't found a lot of people that I could really lean on and trust like that. You know, people, spiritual development is an industry, you could say, isn't it? People have turned it into an industry, into a product. That's the downside of it all, you know. There's one in every corner in Sedona, Arizona. It's like a spiritual circus, you know.
Yeah.
So I feel for people that are going through these things, no matter what they are, if they've, you know, what they're going through, if it contextualizes their spiritual development, it becomes a little easier to work with, as opposed to there's something wrong with me if I just get rid of that limiting belief, if I have more of this, if I have less of that, I'd be happier. Well, maybe all those lessons are what's moving you towards who you truly are anyway. Maybe you should be thankful
The conversations, JC, I'm just wondering, just through speaking about your own experience and sharing it with other people, what sort of impact that's had on your life as well?
Say that again to me, Damien.
Through the conversations that you've been having about sharing your experience with other people, I'm just wondering what sort of impact that's had on you and
Well,
in
the beginning, I was frightened to share it. You know, I just didn't feel. I think you have to kind of filter who you give certain information to. I went down to the doctor and began to tell him about it, and the first thing he wanted to do was put me on antidepressants. So I was in a different context. He went right into a medical model, and I was in a spiritual model. To me, the solution was spiritual, not medical. But I had known that from all of the work I had done over all the years, that what was happening was not medical. So, you know, I think you have to be careful what you say. Some people are ready for that, some people are not ready for that. And I think you'll know who is and who isn't. And finding people that you can share with that has been inspiring to me. I mean, that where I am in life with this now and this still peace, perfection that I see in everything is made every bit of it worth it. Now I can see why. I mean, you couldn't have said that in 2005 when I was on the floor, but as I've moved through this, I can see the benefit and the use that I can be to others with it. So it's been a joy whenever I get an opportunity to really talk at this level about what happened and about where I'm at now. It's very inspiring. But I just, you know, I watch who I do that with. Now, it's, you know, what's the old saying? Tell the truth and then leave town. You know what I mean? You say it to the wrong person, you better get out of town.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I like what you said earlier on as well, JC, about truth being disruptive. And I know that there'll be people either listening to this call or tuning into the recording that on that the pursuit of truth or the pursuit of their own personal truth.
Yes.
And quite often, like in the self-development world where we'd be led to believe that it should be a quite easy and effortless journey for the majority of it, but I just Just wondering what your take was on the whole matter with the sort of working from that space of truth being disruptive.
Yes. Well, I think it's Christ that said, I bring you the sword of truth, not the sword of peace. Mm. If you look at some of the corporations in the world and the politicians in the world where it's no longer acceptable to do some of the things they've been doing, you can see how just once the truth really gets revealed, you can see how disruptive it becomes. And very much so on a personal level. You know, I've some of the things that have happened to me as a result of that experience were excruciatingly painful. So it and again, it doesn't mean that that's going to be your path, but if you're in a particular situation in life and all of a sudden you begin moving out of your commitment forward in your spiritual development, you may see people leaving your life. You may see marriages ending. You may see, you know, you changing your careers, a lot of other things, because as you begin to get closer to the truth, things that were you know, distant from the truth don't make any sense anymore. You can't see yourself doing that. You can't see yourself being in that relationship that was abusive anymore because you've outgrown it. So, you know, I've tended to outgrow everybody and everything, businesses, people, you know, marriages, everything that has been very disruptive to me. But it was like I couldn't, it's who I am. This pursuit I've been on is who I've been my whole life. So it's a tough call. If your calling is to get as much work done as you can in this lifetime towards your pursuit of enlightenment, sometimes it'll be easy, sometimes it's going to be tough. Remember, the ego is not interested in facing the truth. It can't exist in the presence of it. So that means, in a way, it invalidates the elusive identity that you've created your whole life. It's not an easy thing to come to terms with the fact that you've spent 30, 40, 50, 60 years thinking you're this person and you're that identity, to have it be all invalidated to be nothing but an illusion. Mm. We've grasped onto those concepts of ourself our whole lives, and then to begin to see that it's fallacious can be very disruptive to people. So if suddenly see that, you know, there really is no J.C. Mack, there really is no belief that he had about all these things, there really is no... If that's the case, then who am I? Or what am I might be a better question. So, yes. There's no rush, Damien. You know, the last thing in the world you want to do is force this, which is what I tried to do for many years. Tried to hurry the process. Tried to make it happen. That can be upsetting. There's no rush. If you're committed to enlightenment, you're going to end up there anyway.
Yeah. And there's another thing you mentioned early on, JC, about the whole process of surrender. Now, like you pretty much went through the experience, and just through that experience, you spoke about surrendering everything.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering if you could share your thoughts on surrender.
Well, you know, the ego can't live in the present moment. It's either projecting into the future or, you know, flipping into the past. It's always grabbing and grabbing and grabbing. And so for me, and I did that to myself my whole life, grabbing at this, grasping at that, grasping at this, grasping at that. And so it had been a process of beginning to see things for what they truly are. When that begins to happen, things, you know, being able to surrender something. I mean, I think, you know, isn't humility the pathway to God? Well, if humility is the pathway to God, then what you have to surrender is the ego. And what does that mean? You know, the more you can surrender in great depth to God, the more at peace you're going to be with yourself. So for me, you know, in the beginning it was like, well, I'm dying anyways. I may as well have a shot at this and roll the dice and hope that it turns out. But letting go of all these attachments that I had, attachment to myself, attachment to my thinking, attachment to my accomplishments, you know, my attachment to life, my attachment to my children, all the things that I've at times suffered over, I started letting go of. And as I let go of them, authentically let go of these things, like I was willing to let the dice fall wherever they wanted to fall, even if it included me being wiped out, then it was like the ego surrendered. It disappeared. Because there was nothing left for it to grab a hold of. And it can't exist unless it has a position and is grabbing onto something. So if there's nothing to grab a hold of, it's out of business.
Mm.
So, you know, and that's a daily practice I have on my knees every morning, of surrendering the day, surrendering my thoughts, you know, in the name of the highest good, wanting to be of some use, to be able to be used in the name of service to others, you know, to let go of any attachments that I have or positions that I have about the way I think everything should be. All that neurotic stuff that we cling to and we're attached to and suffer over. So surrender and humility to me is the pathway to God.
Mm.
That can be a tough thing for people because you're up against a very cunning, powerful foe.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not sure if it was a Buddha who mentioned it, but he said that like all suffering is a result of attachment.
Yes. And attachment to your thinking. Attachment
yeah.
to your perceptions of life. Attachments to the way you think things should be. Your attachment to being right.
Mm.
All of it. Let alone your cars and your houses and your belongings.
Yeah.
It's incredible how when there's a deep humility and a surrender in your life, how quiet the voice becomes in your head. It can't deal with that. The ego can't deal with humility. It's an enemy. It wants to be the king. It wants to say, I made that happen. I did that. We can get that. We can have anything. We can, you know, there's no God. An ego. I think one of the definitions of ego was edging God out, E-G-O.
Mm.
There's no room for it. Does that make any sense?
I say, yeah, it does. Now, you've mentioned living in both worlds, and I suppose the spiritual dimension of being totally present and in bliss with yourself and the universe. And also trying to operate and function in a material world and having the ability to operate in both worlds.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, yeah, if you could talk a little bit more about your experience of integrating being able to function fully in both worlds.
It's as I've said, it's taken time to be able to do that. I was in a meeting, an executive meeting today, and I was sitting there with five other executives. And there wasn't any thinking going on, so I really didn't have, it was like I didn't have anything to say. I was in a beautiful state of peace, and everybody was, you know, people were talking throughout the meeting, and I hardly said anything. It didn't seem like there was really anything to say. So that sometimes can be an inconvenience because I'm being paid to say something. You know, well, we've hired you, you're the consultant, what do you got to say about that? What am I, you know, I want to get up and give everybody a hug and tell them don't worry about it, it's all going to turn out. But it's not a very appropriate thing to do, is it? Can't walk around hugging people at these big airports and oil companies and banks, you know. Not good for business. But that's what I want to do. So sometimes I have to find ways to kind of re-energize the linear world so that I can function and get thinking again. Because it slowed down so much that, you know, I used to have really fast thinking and very sharp and could answer any question. And before you even finished talking, I had an answer. And all of that was very, very quick for me. And I built a successful business on the quality of my thinking. But now, a lot of the time, it kind of, I either can't hear it or it's not there. and there's not a heck of a lot. Like, there's not a heck of a lot to say. So that's been a struggle for me. You know, in the beginning, I'd miss, because there's no timeline or sequence without thinking. There's no linearity like a 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. That the perception of time disappears. It's like a sequential illusion. It's not there anymore because you need to think in order to have time. So when there was no thinking going on, I'd miss the train, I'd miss the meeting, I wouldn't know what day it was, I'd have all of these, what seemed like people might call time lapses, but it's really just, there's no thinking going on, so there is no more opposites, there's no more duality going on, there's no kind of up and down and right and wrong and 9 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock in the morning. So that became a problem for a while. But as it, you know, over time, as it's kind of just sell, you know, sometimes time's a great healer, so if you can manage to stick with it, it tends to start to integrate itself on its own, because if that's the course you're on. I think there's some things for me to still do here, so, you know, another thing I've had to do is my diary, because now I have problems with detail. In terms of my diary, I have to set things up in different colors, because I can kind of relate to a color. Oh, there's a red color, it means invoice somebody. Oh, there's a blue color, oh, it means that's an emergency, you've got to call somebody, or that's urgent. So I have to find ways. Reading is another thing. I used to be a great reader. It's like I can't focus on the details. So I've had like, it's like a reading ruler where I can just read a paragraph at a time and I move the ruler down. So it helps me do that. So looking for structures in order to support myself in the linear world has been kind of hit and miss, but I'm getting better at it. Mm-hmm. You know, I may not have been fantastic at that stuff to begin with, but certainly after 2005, it became much more different. You know, sometimes I put my shirts on backwards. I put a shirt, you know, a cool T-shirt on, and realize it's, you know, I go out and somebody says, you know, you got your shirt on backwards. I don't think of those things, you know, or silly little things like that. My kids are always laughing at me about that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but that's what it's like trying to, you know, get back in a society with it all. I think the key to it is finding structures that work for you, linear structures that can help support you, you know?
Yeah.
And that's been just trial and error for me. Again, there hasn't been any 0800 number to call to get that information.
Yeah. Now, another thing with the ego-driven world, like a big component of that world is fear. And
yes.
I was just wondering, like, has your relationship with fear changed through this process, and what sort of perspective do you have on it now?
Well, after the experience, I didn't ever think I was going to go back into coaching, executive coaching, which was the business I had, leadership development, which was the business I had, all this work I had been doing for many years, because I didn't see the sense in it anymore. It was, you know, I'd look into an industry and I'd see, geez, the whole structure is built by the ego and it's run off of fear. Fear the boss won't like me, fear we're not going to sell enough product, fear we don't get market share, fear the economy is going to change, fear, fear, fear. So it's like the biggest kept secret in business is fear. I'm, you know, in life in general, but certainly in business, that is what drives everything, the fear of something not happening or the fear of something happening, the market dropping, you know, that kind of a thing. So I couldn't see myself going back in, and it's taken a few years to be able to approach it in a different context, to be able to be there for people and maybe alleviate a bit of that fear. But certainly, you know, the structure of the ego is based on survival. So if you can't have survival without having fear, you know, so that's all driven out of surviving. And again, you know, it was a great quality if you're about to be eaten by a mountain lion a million years ago. You know, it was a nice thing to have. Or if you're going to step in front of a bus, it's nice to be afraid of that. In the linear world, you have to operate in a linear set of rules, so you get run over by the bus. But, in, you know, having said that, I'm sure there's fear still there, but I don't experience it like I used to experience it. I'm not worried about, I don't care if the car gets stolen. I don't care if the house gets repossessed. None of these things bother me. The things that I was so attached to and frightened of losing, don't hold any grasp on me anymore. So it all just kind of comes and goes. I don't market myself, and people call me up to come and coach with them. I used to market crazy like I thought I'd never get any work. I don't do that anymore. It's just like the universe just tends to, in its magnificent glory, send me the work that's mine, and who's, you know, somebody else gets something else. So the closer you get to the truth, the less fear there is. The less ego there is, the less fear there is. And it's just a much healthier place to be in. Things are unfolding exactly the way they're supposed to. That's what you begin to see. There isn't really anything to do about that. You can perceptually think you can change the world, but, you know, maybe the world doesn't need changing. Maybe it's perfect the way it is. So you begin to see it from a completely different context. The content used to run my life. Now it's much more the context. The overall field of perfection, of whatever you want to call it, is in a dance with itself. It doesn't need any interfering with. You see? So that alleviates a lot of the fear, and the less ego there is, the less fear there is, the more peace, you know. The less thinking you do, the more peace you're at with yourself, you see? And it's nice to be able to think, you miss the bus. You miss the meeting.
Right.
You forget what day it is. Not that it matters. So, yes.
Now, I've got a bit more of a personal question, JC. Now, I know that you are a very talented photographer.
Mm.
I was just wondering from, just because the reason I asked this question, because I'm also a keen, budding amateur photographer myself, but I was just wondering, with this change in perception, like how did it actually change your experience of looking through a lens at the world? From a photographic point of view.
Yeah, that's a great question, because I remember I used to wander off into the woods, because I live in the English countryside. I'd wander off into the woods with my camera, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning sometimes, because I couldn't sleep or I'd be, you know, having a struggle with something. So I'd take my camera, and it was great therapy for me. And, you know, how I would look through the lens and I would see something completely different than I'd ever seen it before. And it would be like I would get this sensation in my chest of this kind of excitement when it focused in on what it was, a particular angle of something. And then I'd take the picture, and when I'd come back and start looking at the photographs on my computer, it had a completely different quality to it.
Mm.
So it has changed a lot.
Yeah, great. Now, JC, we're coming to the end of the call, and I know that there's going to be lots of people who are either on the call or who are listening back to the call that have really resonated with your message today,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to be drawn to actually getting in touch with you and staying connected with you and perhaps learning more from you. And I was just wondering, what's the best way for people to stay in touch and... yeah, sort of continue this conversation with you.
Well, we've put up a website. There's not a lot of material on there yet, but it's there, and you can register, and, you know, this call will be made available for download, and there's going to be little articles going up. So if you go to www.jcmac, which is M-A-C, J-C-M-A-C, .net, you can keep in touch with us there, and if you're interested in continuing this conversation, I'd be more than pleased to do that with you.
Brilliant.
And I think that's the simplest way.
Okay, so it's jcmac.net
jcmac.net. And I just want to thank everybody that came on and participated and spent their time to listen. And I hope if there's some insight you've gotten out of it that has alleviated or given you a little more peace of mind, then we're getting the job done.
Well, I can certainly speak from personal experience. I certainly feel that through the course of our conversation today and through the course of the conversations that we've shared over the past few months, that I certainly leave those connections in a much better space. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank you and acknowledge you for sharing your experience. It's not something that you have to do, and the fact that you are doing that and doing that quite freely It really is an inspiration to me, and I have no doubt to a lot of other people.
Thank you, Damien, and God bless everybody.
Great. So this call will be made available, as JC mentioned, through the JC Mac website, and it will also be available on the People You Should Meet recordings page shortly after this call has finished. So once again, thank you everyone for participating on the call, and thank you for submitting your questions in through the site. And in closing, I was just wondering, JC, if you had any final closing words or insights that you'd like to share with people.
One thing. Keep bowing. Keep bowing
like
to
it
all.
Brilliant.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks,
God
JC, and thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.